This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Vadaszewski.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Inch Podcast. This podcast recorded Wednesday, December 7th, 2011, and it is brought to you by the NCAA Men's Division I Frozen Four.
Years of practice, dedication in and out of the classroom, stamina, persistence, sacrifice. It all leads to this moment. Champions win here. Don't miss the 2012 NCAA Men's Frozen Four, April 5th and 7th, hosted by the University of Alabama in Huntsville and the Tampa Bay Sports Commission at St. Pete Times Forum in Tampa, Florida. For information, visit ncaa.com/tickets.
All right, another Inch Podcast. Happy to be back putting this together. As mentioned earlier, my name is Joe Gladyszewski. Pleased to be joined on the podcast by Inch editor Mike Eidelbus. Hello, Bus.
I've been upgraded from special guest.
Yeah, we gave you a promotion to
nice.
Editor. Yeah.
Nice.
Figure. Give you a little something for the effort.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Good, good. Happy to hear that. Also, Hockey East senior writer Kevin Zeiss. Hi, Kevin.
Howdy, how you guys doing tonight?
Doing great. Doing great. And, of course, CCHA senior writer James V. Dowd. Hello, James.
Good evening, Gladdy. How are you?
I'm great. Let's start with some of the news that has kind of come to light over the last 48 hours or so as we record this regarding the program at Alabama Huntsville. All of a sudden, some signs of optimism with what's happening with that men's Division I varsity program, which is currently playing as an independent. Not much news right now, but good to hear that things are being at least being discussed. Right, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, there was a meeting last night with the school's new president and that Save UAH hockey group. And whereas about a month ago, when the outgoing chancellor had seemed to close the door on the program continuing beyond this year, the new president seems like he wants to maybe open that door a little bit and see if there's a solution there. And he's willing to work with the group that came together to save the Charger hockey program. And according to what we've seen in the Huntsville Times, primarily, it sounds like that they could have a solution in a matter of days, which is, for the Chargers, quite encouraging. I'm not 100% sure what kind of solution they can come up with, whether if it's just a monetary solution, maybe something looking at the short term and stabilizing the program for next year. And certainly this is good news for those people and the people that are involved with that program and the university and the people who are fans of the program down there in Huntsville. They've got a pretty good following they've got some intense fans down there who really love that program, obviously. But I think that, while the short term is looking pretty rosy, I think there's a long-term question there that ultimately will need to be addressed, and obviously the first hurdle that they'll need to clear as far as long-term viability is getting into a conference. And can the WCHA, will the WCHA accommodate them when it's reorganized here in a couple of years? Is there another conference that's willing to take them on? I think that that ultimately is a question that's going to determine the fate of the program.
A skeptic might say, of course, the new president will at least sit down and have a discussion with all factions across all entities and on the entire campus and community. But let's hope this has actual traction and some solutions can at least be discussed. Yeah, which I don't think that was the case with the previous chancellor.
Right, and I think that the most important thing that the new regime is recognizing is that there is a group there that is, you know, obviously beyond the hockey team and its coaches and the athletic department. You know, there's a group, a community group, a group of alums, group of supporters that's willing to put whatever effort they need to put forth in order to keep this thing going. So, you know, it's one thing to, you know, I think it's one thing to ignore it when there's not really a lot of passion and a lot of support behind it, but clearly that's not the case here in Huntsville. And, you know, maybe if they can stave off the cutting of the program for a year or so, it gives them more time to find a way to sustain this thing long term. But you know, short term, obviously, it's good news for them and it's a boost. And but I think this is just the first step down a long road. It's certainly not the end.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with this. It'll be interesting to follow.
Well, and here's another, and this is, you know, somewhat unrelated to the developments here, but Huntsville's starting goalie for this year, Clark Saunders, I think it was on Monday night, said he's, after the season, he's transferring to North Dakota.
Yeah.
Which was contingent on Huntsville not having a program.
Right.
And had the program dropped, he would have been eligible immediately. And, you know, you look at his record this season, and obviously it's not great because Huntsville just won their first game this past weekend against Omaha, but his save percentage and goals against are actually really respectable. So, you know, he's a kind of kid that could have made an impact for North Dakota. And, you know, what happens to him now, he's kind of caught in a strange situation, I guess.
Yeah, I'm sure many players on that current team have made decisions about their playing futures. So he's not the only one for sure. Bus, let's get into something else that we vigorously considered when putting together the Inch Power Rankings this week. And with Merrimack falling twice over the weekend and thus dropping out of our number one spot, we had to choose a new team. And we both looked at Minnesota Duluth and Minnesota and gave the Gophers a slight edge, primarily based on that head-to-head, even though it was in the second or third week of the season.
Yeah, I think, you know, I was, you were more on the Duluth side. I was more on the Minnesota side. And, you know, I put a lot of weight in that, in those head-to-head meetings. And yeah, that was a long time ago. That was, you know, mid-October. So we're looking at, you know, almost 2 months ago. And while Duluth, I think, you know, they've got the advantage of reeling off a pretty significant unbeaten streak, and since, in fact, they haven't lost since that, since they got swept by Minnesota. You know, Minnesota's still got a better record. They're 11-4-1 overall. I'm sorry, they're 13-4-1 overall and 10-2-0 in the league. Duluth 11-3-2, 9-2-1. And you know, I liked what I saw from Minnesota in those wins. You know, they've been a little up and down. They've had since that weekend, they're actually going good for a while. And then the last 3 weeks or so, they've had some struggles and weren't getting a lot of contributions outside of their, you know, top two lines. But they started to pick that up a little bit this past weekend against Minnesota State. But I like, you know, I like the direction they're heading, and I just, the one thing that makes me put them ahead of Duluth is their goaltending. I think that that Patterson is better than Ryder. You know, Ryder obviously has a national championship to his credit, but if it came down to you know, a one game scenario or best of seven, and in a neutral site is kind of the scenario we like to use as far as determining who, you know, which team would be better. I think I'd give the edge to Minnesota based on the goaltending.
Yeah, that's all fair. And maybe my side of it, where I leaned a little toward the Bulldogs was that it was consistency. You know, it's
yep.
it's 10-0-2 since those Gopher losses. They haven't lost.
Yeah.
And their schedule hasn't been a severe test, but they played Denver. You know, they played a good Michigan Tech team on the road, which is a hard place to play. They went to Providence and played a team that had a lot of confidence at that point of the season. So I liked Duluth's consistency. I mean, you look at the Gophers, and you know they're very good. They've got those wins, but you know you pop in a loss at Michigan State, you got a loss to St. Cloud, a loss to Wisconsin. So I kind of liked the consistency aspect of where the Bulldogs are right now. So I mean it's so close, and we've never had a tie for a spot or a 1-1A ever in the Inch Power rankings. So we make a call, we stand by it, and that's what we decided for this week.
Yeah, and I think you could really flip those two teams around, and nobody would bat an eye.
Right. Well, the fans of those teams would bat an eye.
Yeah. Yeah, you're probably right, but at the same time, I mean, you can make strong arguments either way. I think, you know, you look at Minnesota, they've got, I think from top to bottom, especially at forward, they're more dynamic, but, you know, Duluth's a veteran team. I think, you know, a little more experience than Minnesota, which, you know, you can kind of say that kind of balances that out. Defensively, I think they're fairly even. You know, to me, I give the slight edge to the goalie, to Patterson. That's kind of where it balances out. But, you know, like you said, Duluth hasn't lost since October 15th. So,
you know, though, if you look at those losses for Minnesota, you know, Wisconsin's a big rivalry game on the road. They bounce back the next night and won, you know, from a 3-1 loss and won 4-1. And then, Buss, I know you've witnessed those games against Michigan State personally, the loss and the tie in East Lansing. And I think, you know, you've said to me and from what I've heard and what I've observed of those games, they were in both those games. And really it was, you know, a matter of a bounce here, a bounce there, or maybe, you know, a better shot picking a corner instead of the goalie's chest. So it's not like they weren't in these games and they're not playing, you know, and even the St. Cloud loss, you know, still a one goal loss on the road. So I don't think those are bad losses for Minnesota. So,
no, and Minnesota kind of got into a trap there. Or not a, I shouldn't say a trap, but more of a routine that for those three Fridays, where they would fall behind. You know, Wisconsin scored three goals in the second period. Minnesota's down 3-0. In fact, I don't think in that game Minnesota didn't even score until maybe the last minute or so of regulation. Same thing happened against St. Cloud. Minnesota was down, I think, 4-1 at one point. They end up getting two third period goals, come back. And then against Michigan State, same thing. You know, Michigan State goes up 2-0. Minnesota scores to tie it up in the first, and then Michigan State goes out and scores a couple more to, you know, in the early in the third to make it 4-2. So there's just that, you know, there was those three Fridays where they just, you know, kept getting down, and you know, in two of those games they almost battled their entire way, you know, almost battled all the way back. But I think that it seems like they've gotten over that hump. Obviously, they were pretty good last weekend. Not great, but you know, good enough to beat Minnesota State.
Yeah. North Dakota's won 4 in a row. Are they putting it together? Bunch of home games coming up here. What do you think the ceiling is for this team? Certainly not as bad as they started.
I don't think it's as bad as they started. I think it depends on whether...
How high can they go?
Boy, I don't know. They got to find somebody else to score goals besides Brock Nelson. I know that.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got 14 or 15 goals, and they've got 50 maybe as a team. Actually, it's those three guys. You know, we've talked about it before. Talked about how it was the Minnesota series, I think, how it looked like they were kind of, North Dakota was kind of standing around waiting for Christo to do something. Well, you know, mm-hmm. You look at the you look at their stats right now. They've got Nelson's got 22 points, Knight's got Corbin Knight's got 21 and Christo's got 19 and the next closest has 9. Right. So there's a huge drop off, which is something that we have never really seen. So they've obviously been hurt by the guys that, they've had some academically ineligible guys. Colton St. Clair is a freshman. You know, JT Miller went to the OHL instead of, coming in. Grimaldi's been hurt, and big things were expected from him. You know, they just haven't got that secondary scoring that we're used to seeing, the Malones and guys like that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
See. They don't have an easy schedule the rest of the way either. You know, they've got a lot of tough games. I guess it goes
in minutes.
Yeah, they got a lot of home games, but they see Minnesota. They see a Michigan Tech team that's better than they have been in the past years. You got to go to Duluth, go to St. Cloud, go to Denver. It's they'll be battle tested when it comes to the time that really matters.
Yeah, and you know what? Those are all opportunities. If you get 3 points those weekends, that means they only get one, and you're moving up in the standings.
Right.
Or
that's
catching
right.
up. Yep. So you control your own destiny, so to speak. Let's move on a little bit, Dowd, to some CCHA chatter. And if Merrimack was the most surprising team in the country so far, Ohio State is certainly at least in that conversation. What's going on with the Buckeyes?
I think they're just playing good hockey. You know, I guess there's always been some talent there, and they seem to have kind of underachieved. And, with the culture shift the last couple of years, I think that there's been more effort on film, on the weight room, and on the off-ice stuff that, in building hockey players. And I think it's starting to pay off. They don't have anybody that really jumps out as, a huge elite talent, maybe like Andy Mealy did for Miami last year, or Carter Camper has, or Hagelin at Michigan. But they've just got a lot of solid players up and down the lineup. They've got pretty good goaltending, excellent goaltending so far this year from both goaltenders. And I think everything is just falling in the right place. And, frankly, they're maybe fortunate that they're on the upswing at a time when a lot of teams in the CCHA are maybe, in the middle of their typical trajectory or on the downswing. So I think things look up for them. They've, they haven't lost since October 20th on the road at Michigan State. And, they've got an opportunity with a home-and-home against Miami this coming weekend that could be really big for them. Not only, to take points in the standings, but I think, the hockey fans for Ohio State really appreciate that in-state rivalry, and that can be a big thing. And one of the things that has always been disappointing about Ohio State is the lack of fan support, to the point where they're offering free tickets for students and things like that. So, coming out here and having a good showing against Miami and going into the break in first place, by quite a bit, really, this is an important weekend for Ohio State to close it out good and then have momentum going into the second half.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think the biggest key with them is 31 goals allowed. In 16
yep.
games.
Yeah. Yep.
If you're holding your opponents to 2 goals, that's, you're going to give yourself a chance to win.
Yep.
I think we're seeing, that epiphany that we saw for Western Michigan last year at Ohio State. Maybe it took a little bit longer for that to happen because some of the senior leadership and things graduated. And I don't want to say they weren't good guys at Ohio State, but it's a really young team, and they're buying into the new philosophy and the new regime, and I think we're seeing that epiphany we saw from Western Michigan last year.
Yeah. We've got to think Mark Osiecki's certainly the favorite for Coach of the Year honors, should those be awarded right now.
They have 4 seniors on their roster.
Yeah.
One of them's Cal Heater, which...
He's a big part of it.
Which would obviously, And
yeah,
one of them's
you can
Danny
go a
Treese.
Long way with a good goaltending. Another team playing pretty well in the CCHA is Michigan State. I saw them on TV a little bit and will be able to again this weekend. They've got a home-and-home with Michigan. If you're a pro scout and you're going to watch that team, you're probably coming home with an empty notebook. But if you're a college hockey fan who likes a team that's getting the most out of its ability, playing hard for one another, and giving a solid effort, you're going to like that team an awful lot.
Well, they're certainly getting the most out of what they have. You know, I would say they've got Torrey Krug, who is an excellent captain and leader, and I think they've got really strong goaltending. But other than that, you know, it's a team that really needs to work hard, have maximum effort, and get the most out of every single shift. And they've been doing that. I don't know if they're playing it with a chip on their shoulder because of the on ice downturn of that program over the past few years. It hasn't been living up. You know, they won a national title, only like 4 or 5 years ago. And they've really been struggling these last few years. So I don't know if it's rallying around. You know, this is Michigan State. We got to live up to the standard of what Michigan State hockey has been historically, or what. But they're finding a way to light a fire under them every single night, and give them credit for making the most of that. They've only lost once, since October 28th.
Yeah, I actually think it might be the reverse of that, and not trying to live up to the history, but just kind of getting when a new coach comes in, everybody gets a blank slate. You know, it's a chance to start over. I think that has something to do with it. They play a little bit more of a, they're not a run and gun team by any stretch, but they do play a little bit more of an up-tempo style, a little bit more of a puck possession type style. We were kind of talking about it before we got started. You know, I saw them play against Minnesota twice in person, and you're exactly right. They're not the kind of team that you're going to go out and just be dazzled by their talent level, because quite honestly, it's pretty average. I mean, but what they do have is, as you've said, great goaltending, and they just outwork you. I mean, every shift, every second, they're giving the maximum effort, and they have to. I mean, that's just the makeup of this team, and it works for them. I think it's hard to play against a team like that.
Yeah, they're a good team right now. I think the GLI is going to be important for them.
You know, I think it's going to be important for both the Michigan teams. All three of the Michigan teams, yeah.
Yeah. And a BC team that's shown a little bit of inconsistency, you know.
I think there's still but BC's still a measuring stick, and you've got Michigan State who's trying to prove they're real. Michigan who's trying to prove that, some of this recent downturn, over the last month is a fluke, and you've got Michigan Tech who's trying to prove they're real. So, I think it's going to be really interesting to watch. I'd say it's one of the more exciting GLIs we've seen in a long time.
Are you going to be there for that, Doug?
I will be there for that.
Good deal.
It's kind of funny you say that about it being a measuring stick, because as good as Michigan State has been lately, even at 10-5-1 overall, I don't know what to make of them. I don't.
We might be saying that in late February, though.
Well, you know what, though? I think we're making of them maybe exactly what they are. You know, if you look back, the Michigan team last year had, they had the Carl Hagelin, they have John Merrill, they had Louis Caparuso. But they didn't have the depth that a Michigan team typically has. And you saw what, rallying around, playing good defense, having strong goaltending, and, uniting to the cause was able to do for that Michigan team when it came to the late season, the CCHA tournament, the NCAA tournament last year. That's just the example that comes most readily to mind. But sometimes, seeing yourself for what you are and deciding to make the most of it is something you can make a go of in college hockey. It's just a question, can they sustain it? We're in early December right now. Can they sustain it until, the end of February or the end of March?
We will see. That's why we watch every weekend. Kevin.
I'm here.
How are you?
You know, I'm enjoying the lovely weather right now.
So am I.
Don't get us started.
We're going to get to outdoor things in my in the deterioration. I've got a little rant to do. But
looking forward to that.
Yeah, Kevin.
That's what's called a tease.
Yeah. Coming up after.
Are you calling Gladia a tease?
Yes.
Yes, I am. Coming up after the break, more from deterioration. Merrimack Northeastern.
Did you just call Hockey East a break?
No.
No.
Sorry, I should have emailed that to you.
Let's start with the Huskies there.
All right.
I caught Northeastern last weekend, last Friday night, when they played at Notre Dame and handed the Irish their first loss in their new arena, a 9-2 whitewashing. And I remember sitting there watching the game from the very, very beginning of the puck drop there, thinking to myself, wow, Northeastern is really, really going to the puck. I mean, just buzzing around. And sure enough, 30 seconds in, they scored. Scored in their first three shots, chased Mike Johnson out of the game, and, you know, 4 minutes into the match, it's 3-0. And I really came away impressed with that club, especially given the fact that there's one senior on that roster, and he's injured right now. He's not even playing. Really, really felt like that was a club that, you know, I think that they've, in the last five games, they're 5-0 and got some impressive wins in that list there. Twice over Notre Dame at Notre Dame, once at Yost over Michigan. You know, that's a very, very good team right now.
They've got an interesting game this weekend against another team that's emerged in Hockey East in UMass Lowell. Those swing games, I mean, I think we're going to see a lot of that in the CCHA down the second half, you know, with teams that are pretty evenly matched all kind of shuffling into standings positions, you know, that those head-to-head matchups carry a lot more weight, seemingly, than some of the others.
Without question. I mean, you know, we're 2 months into the season here, and I think there's a lot of parallels that could be drawn between CCHA and Hockey East, where you might have one or two clubs at the top of the table, but for the vast majority of it, the rest of the teams in the league are pretty much interchangeable. And I think that's definitely the case with Hockey East at this point, where, you know, on any given weekend, you're going to see, you know, teams that last weekend got swept and you thought, wow, how did they lose to that team? All of a sudden they come out and they're picking up 4 points against somebody else. And there's a lot of that going on, especially within Hockey East, but, it's definitely something that's happening with CCHA as well.
Yeah, it's crazy. Okay. I noticed that over the last, you know, last 6 weeks or so, and it has happened with the CCHA. It's not just the shuffling, and when you go head to head, you see these shifts. But, you know, in both leagues, we've seen teams get a little momentum and then kind of fall back a little bit. Get some momentum, fall back a little bit. You know, it looked like for a while that, you know, New Hampshire was going pretty good. Now they've fallen back a little bit. You know, they get swept by Lowell. Lowell's been on a good run. You know, do they fall back? Maine was struggling. Now that all of a sudden they're playing better. Playing Vermont helps, obviously, but
sure. And Providence is another example. I mean, they've been up and down, and last weekend knocked off Merrimack twice. So, you know, it's definitely something that's, I think you're going to probably see that the rest of the way out. I don't necessarily think that there's going to be a whole lot of separation amongst a lot of these mid-pack teams. I think you're going to see really, really competitive games through the entire rest of the way.
You know what I'm thinking as we keep bringing this up across many leagues, and the same can be said of ECAC hockey. Playoffs are going to be unbelievable. Really, for the league tournaments are going to be great, And then for the national tournament's going to be great.
Yeah.
Can we cue Jim Mora playoffs? Are you talking about playoffs?
I used to have that someplace. I wonder where that went.
Yeah.
I can't find it.
But getting to the other team that you mentioned, kind of with Merrimack and last weekend losing a home-and-home, both ends of it, to Providence, that's a team that absolutely looked like they had played once within the last 3 weeks.
Yep.
They played the two games on Friday and Saturday against Providence. Prior to that, they had one game against Alabama Huntsville back on November 23rd. And hadn't played prior to that since November 11th with a 3-2 win against Boston U. They came out, they looked rusty. To be completely honest, they looked like, you know, they were not used to playing somebody other than their teammates. Needless to say, I think they rebounded a little bit tonight. They earlier this evening, they defeated Vermont 5-2 and kind of got themselves back on the right track here. But, you know, they've got a couple games coming up here in the next couple weeks at Colgate this Saturday and against Union the following Saturday and kind of can hopefully build a little bit of their momentum back going into the holiday break here.
Yeah, there's two good tests coming up for Merrimack. I'll be at the game Saturday night.
Merrimack has an interesting schedule if you look at what's coming up. They go to Colgate, host Union. Then they're up at the Dartmouth tournament.
Yep.
And they play St. Lawrence. And then either Holy Cross or Dartmouth. Then they go to BU and at BC.
Yeah, they open their second half conference schedule with road games, BU and BC, then Maine twice at home, and UNH home and home. So.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the people who have kind of had sort of a suspicious glance at Merrimack when they were ranked first in the country there, I think those first couple weeks in January are going to sort of be the make or break for a lot of those concerns. I think that three-week stretch is probably going to tell us what we need to know about Merrimack as far as are they a legitimate contender to, you know, forget Hockey East title, but, you know, could they make some noise in the NCAA tournament?
That is a good question. I think last year's success makes this less surprising. You know, it's less startling, even for longtime followers of the sport.
But. Yeah, and I'm not surprised. I mean, I think you can see the steps that Merrimack has taken within the past, you know, 3-4 years. I think you can see this building. I think the question was, you know, a lot of people had questions about them early on was, you know, who have they played to be unbeaten and ranked number one in the country. I don't necessarily think that they should be out of the discussion necessarily, but I think there's still definitely a little bit more that needs to be learned about this team, but it's a quality club. There's definitely no question in my mind that this is definitely an NCAA tournament caliber team. The question is going to be how far into March, April could this team go?
Agreed.
Yeah, they're not going to fall apart.
Good goaltending doesn't go away too much.
No. Right. Hey, but you know what, though? At least they've had people step
Aaron
up.
Aaron Bell said.
Didn't Merrimack lose their top three scorers after last year? I mean, so.
Yes.
Was it the top three?
Yeah. I just pulled it up.
Yes, it
I was
going
to say DaCosta, Barton, DaCosta for sure, and then they had two other seniors I remember that were up there. So at that time, I remember looking at it, and you know, you knew DaCosta was going on to bigger things, and you know, seeing two seniors up there, and it was like, oh, is this a 1 year wonder? You know, you see teams pop up like time to time, so. It was really impressive to see him reel that off at the start of the year, and I'm looking forward. I mean, that's a gauntlet, you know, through the end of January.
Sure,
we're gonna know some things about this team then.
One note on Stefan DaCosta: 90 points in 67 career games.
Is that good? Not sure.
That's not bad. That's 1.5 points per game.
Yeah, Mark Hartigan is jealous.
That'll work.
See how I slipped my Mark Hartigan in there?
Yep, your Huskies.
My Huskies. All right. Well, I'll get a look at Merrimack up close and personal from the end zone press box at Star Rink on Saturday night against another team that is really a pleasant surprise in the college hockey landscape this year, which is Colgate. That's a team that had one of the, you know, we've been doing this with Inch for about 10 years and following the game longer than that. And I think last year's Colgate season was one of the strangest that I've ever seen in terms of teams, how things went for them. You would watch them and know that they're not that bad. And yet there they were with no wins in conference play as February was taking place, and kind of put it together at the end and then won two playoff series and made it to the league's championship weekend. So you knew that would be a good team there. And now they're really really getting a lot out of that confidence. They went to Europe in the off season. The whole team went to Italy for some sightseeing and training and a few games. But they're a good little club, and Austin Smith obviously leading the way with what he's done on the score sheet and such. But Colgate's pretty good. They're a good team. I look forward to you kind of figured it out early. They won the Omaha Stampede, and then they split with Miami at home, and you're kind of like, well, let's keep an eye on these guys, and they've just kept going. So good stuff there from the Raiders, and five wins in a row going into this game. So
another team with a interesting start to the second half, four road games, two at Ferris State, then Princeton and Quinnipiac.
Yep.
That Ferris State series could be interesting. You know, that's another team that's maybe we're trying to figure out what they're made of.
Yeah, that's a good series right there.
Well, that's that's actually a good weekend around these parts, because I think Duluth is at Western that same weekend.
Mm. I believe you're right. Yep, that's correct.
Good stuff.
Might have to put some miles on the old car.
Get out on the road, bus.
And Miami is here in town to play the Spartans too. So,
all that same January 6-7, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Hey, Glady, you mentioned Austin Smith and his abilities on the offensive end of the ice, but I think a big part of why Colgate's actually doing pretty well this year is actually the other end. Their goaltending is a lot better this year than it was last year, and it's
right.
The same guys, but they've stepped up their level of play.
Right. Yeah, Eric Mihalik is a sophomore. He's gotten most of the starts and most of the playing time, but Alex Even, who's been a four-year player there, with some good performances and some not as good, but he's got six games and six starts. He's 4-1-1 with a 1.48 goals against and 94.
I was going to say only 94.8.
Only, yeah.
So are you saying Even is a strength?
Yes, I am. You can write the headlines around here now that we promoted you to editor.
Yeah.
So
I watched Coach's Corner this week.
Good job. Yeah, so that team, you know, again, we'll get a closer look this week. News came down, their second leading scorer, Chris Wagner, is a sophomore forward. Anaheim Ducks draft pick. He's not going to play in that game. He got a supplemental disciplinary ruling for an incident in their last game, so he will be out against Merrimack.
I mean, Brendan Shanahan's really overstepping his bounds.
Exactly. One thing that, you know, I'm not going to call it strange. Just say later start that ECAC hockey teams get into conference play. I mean, most of these teams have played 8 or 9 league games so far this season. Some 7 and a couple as few as 6 in Brown and Yale. But you know, it takes a little bit longer to kind of figure out where everybody's going to fall into place. And right now, Cornell's in first place, and I think it's pretty deserved. That team's pretty good. I'm a believer in Colgate right now. So we'll see how things go in the future. I think Clarkson and St. Lawrence both are a little bit out kicking their coverage so far. I'm currently in a third place tie with Yale and Union. Yale really puzzling and probably just not having that great of a year right now. We'll see what we get. I think Harvard's pretty good. Still, I think that they'll come through. I think they'll be a top half team. Maybe not top four, but definitely top six. So,
how'd you like to be Yale? Lose tonight at Massachusetts at UMass 3-1. Lost four of their last five. And they get to sit and think about that for 25 days.
Yeah.
Till their next game.
Yeah. A lot of stuff going on there. Well, maybe it's good for them. They can get away from the whole thing and start again in January.
Well, not only that, I mean, facing some adversity throughout the year. I mean, that's a team that we've talked about, over the last few years, all year long. This is a team, believe in them. You know, we know another, you know, supporters of other conferences, you don't think it's real, but, you know, and then when it comes time, they weren't really ready, but maybe suffering this adversity. I mean, they never went through a stretch like this at all last year. Maybe this adversity will...
Last three years,
they really haven't. I mean, it's...
Yeah, just glancing over it. Yeah, nothing, you know, never more than maybe two losses in a row, which is, that's incredible.
Yeah, now they're 1-4 in their last five games.
So, you know, maybe it's a wake-up call. You know, there's still talent there, Brian O'Neill and,
a lot of talent.
A lot of that, though, speaks to what senior class they had that graduated last year. I mean, that was just an amazing group of players that they had that left last spring, so...
Yeah, but there's enough in that room, Kevin. But we'll see what happens.
Well, like 1998 Michigan team without Brendan Morrison and some of the other guys who were on those, you know, incredible 96 and 97 teams. The 96 one that won and 97 one that fell short. But, you know, maybe some of the leftovers. Yeah, still a pretty good team, but missing some of the top-end talent, but still enough talent there that they pulled it together and won.
There you go.
You know, it's kind of amazing when you look at Yale just pouring through their last few seasons. You have to go all the way back to February of 2008 to find the last time they lost three in a row.
Yep.
And even then, they lost back-to-back games once in 2008, 2009, back-to-back games once in 2009, 2010. And then last year they lost back-to-back games once. So
that was a playoff series, wasn't it?
Last season?
Yeah.
No.
No, it was Union Rensselaer.
Oh, right.
But
which is a tough trip. Both those teams are in the national tournament.
Yeah, there you go. So, that's
remarkable
a team
consistency. That's why it's puzzling.
It's pretty much had their way, so.
I just remember the first time I saw that team coming to its own was I think the beginning of 2010 when they played Ferris State at the Wisconsin tournament and just being blown away by how good they were. And my God, have they delivered week in and week out, you know, with the exception of of slip-ups maybe when it comes time to the NCAA tournament. Those are some memorable and incredible losses at that. So definitely just an awesome run for Yale. And, you got to give them the benefit of the doubt they can bounce back from this stretch.
Atlantic Hockey has eight teams with 10 or more points right now. Air Force seems to be kind of the early front runner. They've got 17 points, but have also played 11 games. Mercyhurst 6-1-2 by win percentage. They're the best team so far in the league. But then your next teams from RIT has 12, Robert Morris has 11, and then Bentley, Canisius, Holy Cross, and Niagara all have 10 points apiece. You know, for a long time, this was kind of a two-team league, you know, with Air Force and RIT, and, you know, maybe a Niagara would sneak in, maybe a Mercyhurst or somebody like that would make a little run. But I think this league is really balanced for the first time in quite a while, and it'll be interesting to watch.
Well, I think we saw that at the end of last year. I think there were five teams that were within two wins of first place, you know, and it was maybe, I don't know, the league was coming into its own and starting to see some depth and, you know, finding a competitive steady state. So,
yeah. And the composition of the league probably has something to do with that. You know, you've got some that have been in there since it was known as the MAC. You had some transfer in or join the league from other associations, College Hockey America primarily. And then, you know, RIT elevated its program to the Division I level during that time frame. And maybe it just needed somebody to set the bar. And if Air Force and RIT have done that, now people know what to strive for.
You know, what's interesting about that league is that, as you mentioned, you've got eight teams with 10 or more points. Yet the team that probably has the best win is Sacred Heart at 1-14.
Yeah.
They beat Yale.
Yeah, exactly.
Although Mercyhurst did beat Cornell.
That is true.
I was going to say across the board there that league's got some pretty impressive wins across the board, you know, or results anyway. I mean, Army's tied Colgate this season already.
Yep.
You know, Niagara held, was a 1-0 loss at Cornell. So you've had some really good, you know, it's not just that league is competitive within itself. They're actually really being competitive across college hockey.
Man, Niagara, 4-5-5, 36 goals for, 39 goals against.
There you go.
I don't think you're going to see a blowout in either direction when you go check out the Perps this year.
No.
It'll be tight. It will be tight.
Yeah, they beat Colgate. Holy Cross beat BU.
Yep.
They had, you know, looking at Niagara, they had 2 5-goal games to start the year, and one was the exhibition against Queens, and then they lost 5-0 at Michigan. They have everything as a 1-goal game or a 2-goal game.
Yeah.
You know?
And 5 ties.
Yeah.
So, Air Force has they play CC in Denver during the holidays.
They don't have to fly to those games.
No, they don't. One of them is even at home.
They'll sleep at home those nights.
Yeah. They go to CC and they host Denver.
Yeah.
In the weirdest rink you'll ever see.
Air Force's or Denver?
Well, maybe not the weirdest, but the press box, the Air Force Arena is actually houses hockey and basketball.
Okay.
But they're on different sides, separated by a wall or whatever. Right. But the press box for hockey is also the press box for basketball, just the other side.
Gotcha.
So there's windows on both sides of the press box.
Gotcha. I don't think that'll affect the game against Colorado College on December.
Shouldn't.
Okay. Good deal. Anything before we get to deterioration? Anything?
You guys mentioned it in the first shift, but I was really impressed with that article from the St. Cloud Times about the giving some insight into the whole you know, small schools dealing with the transition to new leagues thing. So I just want to shout that out. That's somewhat related to...
Yeah, if you haven't read that yet, it's worth the time.
It's not only worth the time to see how... It's worth the time for a lot of reasons, really.
Right.
To see
well,
how
what I like about it is it's good investigative reporting where they, you know, they clearly have done their research and made the right requests and got the right information, but it's not out there to smear anybody. Like, it's actually genuinely giving you... I don't know, a pretty good picture of, you know, of what was going on behind the scenes, and it was a pretty confusing time for college hockey fans, and and I'm sure college hockey coaches and university officials. So I thought it was pretty cool.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah, and for people who didn't see it, the thumbnail sketch is that it was kind of a behind the scenes look as, you know, the college hockey landscape was changing over the summer at, you know, how St. Cloud was handling it as teams started dropping out of the WCHA and going to the NCHC. And really, I think what amazed me, you know, it has some of the emails and correspondence and, you know, kind of the original NCHC plan, so to speak. But I think one of the two things that really stood out from my perspective about that whole thing was how united St. Cloud was. You know, everybody from the coach to the Gino Gasparini, who is the special advisor, the former North Dakota coach, was a special advisor to St. Cloud, to the president, were all on the same page. And which is rare in college athletics. And number two, they didn't panic. You know, they had a plan.
Right.
They had a backup plan. And they probably had a plan C also. You know, it really is quite an interesting read.
All right.
And your Huskies.
And my Huskies. Deterioration comes. I'll start a little bit with. It'll be deterioration, but it'll be hockey related for at least significant parts of the deterioration. First was a horse we've beaten before, a dead horse we've beaten before. Outdoor games. The NCAA used to have, and possibly still does, but there was some rule or exemption, or it was permissible that every 4 years a team could take an international trip and it would be compliant and they could play exhibition games against international teams and such. And many schools have taken advantage of that. Colgate this past year, Princeton did it for a very long time under Toot Cahoon and others. But this outdoor games thing, can they put something in where, like, you just get to play one every 4 years or 8 years or 10 years? I mean,
you must be thinking about Michigan.
No, I'm not. It was announced that Union and Harvard, I believe, are going to play at Fenway. You know, they're going to have a bunch of games at Fenway again this year. You know, UNH, Maine, UMass, you know, Northeastern, people like that. And I'm like, it's great for those teams who haven't done it before, and it's great to have that experience, but how much is too much? I mean, we talk about it every year around January 1st.
You know, I was at that game at Camp Randall, the Michigan-Wisconsin game a couple years ago, and I remember Mike Eve saying, I want to do this again. It's great. A lot of energy, a lot of good things. And he said, then he kind of sat back and he's like, you know what, like maybe every 4 years. You know, so as
yeah, for each four, class, so
each class gets to play at once. I think that makes sense. It's, you know, being in the CCHA, you know, you kind of grow weary of it. You know, the novelty's worn off because you see games that are happening every single year. You know, they played it a while back. You had Ohio State playing at Lambeau, and you had the Michigan State game that was set the whole thing in motion. But then, you know, the Camp Randall game, and then the big chill at the Big House, and now the game in Cleveland. And I don't know if the climate should lend a hand to it, but I feel like Notre Dame Stadium's got to be a possibility eventually. It's getting a little old.
Kevin, your Cleveland Indians got that thing going this year.
You know, with regards to the Indians, I've because I'm actually from that area, I've actually done some looking into that, and they're incorporating a lot of high school activities with that. They've got actually a little high school tournament. I think it was actually this past weekend, but they've got a pretty big high school rivalry there the weekend before Ohio State and Michigan play. But it also encompasses part of sort of the little winter carnival that they have there. You know, they've got a sledding hill there. They've got an ice skating track around the outfield and stuff like that. So they've made it into a little bit more of a event, more than just sort of a one-off type of game, which I get the feeling a lot of this is. But my gut feeling is that a lot of this is places trying to keep up with each other. You know, it's until the next big thing comes along, this is what we're going to keep seeing. You know, that until somebody comes up with a working model of some sort of a neutral site game, sort of what Cornell and Boston University do down at Madison Square Garden, you know, something that works in that sense with a neutral site or something of that nature, we're going to keep seeing these outdoor games because that's the new thing.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, just on that game. Go ahead. Sorry.
The keeping up with the Joneses thing was a good point. And Fenway did a great job that first time in terms of maximizing the setup and the resources. They had all kinds of stuff going on. So
I was just going to say that game in Ohio, I mentioned the Miami series is a huge marketing opportunity for this Ohio State team to prove they're real. You got to believe playing in a baseball stadium outdoors, that's going to generate some energy. And at this point, they're playing a lot better than Michigan. And I think people down in Ohio will, maybe really latch onto this team if they can go out and maybe do to Michigan what Michigan did to Michigan State last year.
Yeah.
I will say I actually looked into tickets for that for some of my friends and that. And for the most part, there aren't many seats left in the setup that they have it. So you could be looking at a pretty nice crowd there and a really good atmosphere for a game.
And it's a great baseball rink.
I'm not going to start on that.
I love it.
It's a great baseball stadium. Let's call it that. It's good venue for baseball. I don't know how it'll work for hockey, but we'll see.
You can be a baseball rink.
They have one in Atlanta for
Kevin,
sure.
Kevin, we realize you're new to staff here, so that's parlance. It's fair accepted enough. Inch jargon. Football rink, baseball rink.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah. Williams Arena is a great basketball rink.
They've tried playing enough baseball games in the snow there, so that's why it worked out a little
bit. Yeah, no kidding.
That's a great call.
I'm excited to go watch the West Indies versus Australia and New Zealand on the cricket rink in St. Lucia in the spring.
Okay, that one went too far.
What is cricket called? Cricket what?
Test pitch? Ground?
Ground.
Ground,
yeah,
yes.
Ground.
Okay. Now, I'm not going to another outdoor game unless somebody's paying me.
The way the ice was at the Ford Field Frozen Four, we could have called that the hockey ground.
Could have called it the hockey pool.
I was gonna say the football stripes look beautiful on the ice there from TV.
Like Michigan.
Yeah, nice grid. Okay, NHL alignment or realignment. Schedule formats, anything, people?
I like it. It makes sense.
I agree. It makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense.
I know a lot of the concerns that were expressed by a lot of the clubs were, playing divisional games 2-3 hours away from their own time zone. And I think that got a little old for some clubs, and now the worst case scenario is you have an 8 o'clock start for a divisional game. Local time anyway. I think that'll appease most everybody's concerns, and it's a good setup.
Yeah. And to me, one of the big points was you get to see everybody.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, everyone's going to play home and away. And if I'm a Anze Kopitar fan in, Hingham, Massachusetts, how often are the Kings going to come to to Boston, or a Ryan Miller fan in Phoenix? You gotta have those opportunities. Well, and that to me is important.
Ryan Miller fan in Phoenix, you're never going to see that again. So
There's not even Phoenix fans in Phoenix.
Yeah, well.
There's Red Wings fans in Phoenix.
Yeah.
Just not enough of them to support a franchise on two games a year.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, I like that aspect. One thing, and I didn't read up on it, but maybe you guys did see it. I love the divisional, or I guess conference playoff, as they're calling it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, I mean, that's the bus you and I, and we were talking about a little bit prior to the podcast about how great would it be if they renamed the conferences with those old division names.
Yeah.
Of, Patrick, Adams, Norris, and Smythe. I think that would make such great sense.
It would, which is why they won't do it, but...
There you go.
I think it'll serve its purpose. I mean, having watched the Blackhawks, you know, really closely for a long time, when they ran into Vancouver, Gladys, you'll know a thing or two about that.
I watched some of those games.
Yeah, they, you know, that built up into a healthy rivalry, and those games, you know, generate a lot of interest, a lot of, you know, good TV ratings, you know, ticket sales and secondary ticket sales and things like that. You know, you think to Detroit and Colorado back in the 90s, like when you see somebody 2 years in a row or 3 years in a row and, you know, you can build up a little bit of resentment or bad blood, it'll be good. And if you're going to see the same group of teams in the first two rounds, you're going to get that a lot more quickly. So maybe a team like Detroit is disappointed. That I think they're happy with the time zone thing, but they would have liked to have been with some of the you know, some of the Canadian teams that are you know, in what I guess what we'll call it the Northeast for now. You know, so maybe it's a disappointment there, but you know, maybe there'll be some new. They already have a rivalry, I think, with Chicago. You got a chance to build that with the St. Louis's and Minnesota's and Winnipeg's when you see them a few times in a row in the playoffs. So,
yeah.
Well, and for me, it harkens back to the, you know, the NHL when I was a kid.
Me too.
You know, growing up with the North Stars.
Yeah, Chicago and Minnesota.
It was a big deal. Yeah, it was a huge deal to play Chicago in the playoffs. You know, it wasn't quite as huge of a deal to play St. Louis, but still. I mean, St. Louis was always good, but I mean, Minnesota-Chicago was just, it was venomous. Those two teams did not like each other one bit, you know, and you think back to, you know, when I think back to some of those matchups back then, you know, which of those playoff series were the most fierce, you know, and it was the ones that came out of the divisions. It was Montreal and Quebec and, you know, Calgary and Edmonton and Boston and
Boston, Buffalo, Boston, Buffalo. Quebec, Boston, Montreal. Yeah. You know,
Rangers.
Hartford, Boston.
Yeah.
I was an Adams Division guy as a kid.
Well, and I think you can make the parallel with the NFL even too, is where you start getting a lot of these closer cities getting these rivalries. I mean, you know, the best rivals in the NFL are much of these same things. Packers, Bears, Browns, Steelers, Raiders, Broncos. I mean, the vitriol is there with the clubs that play each other, you know, multiple times a season, then get into the playoffs and you play them. And I think that's a really, really, really good move for the NHL to take.
Seattle, St. Louis.
Exactly. Yeah, something like that.
Throw the books out.
Yeah, even as an objective observer, you know, I don't really know much about the NFC East, but when you see those divisional games, you know, the Redskins and Cowboys and Eagles and Giants, it's like, you know, those are games that you might pay more attention to because you know they're going to be good games that are played passionately. So
you're going to pay attention to those games because they're being shoved down your throat. But
well, true.
Well, yeah, there's that.
True.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to be nostalgic, but that to me is, you know, to me, football, you know, and I'm using NFL as an example, you know, what really is classic quintessential NFL, were those games back in the, you know, when the Giants had Parcells and the Redskins had Gibbs, and it was those late afternoon kickoffs on a Sunday, and it was kind of gray and cold and snowing, and both teams hated each other, and you know, that to me, I mean, that's kind of my ideal of the NFL, and you know, my ideal of the NHL is a little bit is kind of the same. You know, we think back to Montreal and Quebec playing in the first round of the playoffs, and there's 500,000 penalty minutes.
Yeah.
You know what else this model has that maybe the NFL doesn't? You guys cracked the joke about you know, the NFC West. There's pretty good competitive balance here.
Sure.
You know, there's good teams across the board. You know, you look at Pittsburgh and Washington and Philadelphia and the Rangers at times, and maybe you see flashes from the Islanders and the Hurricanes. Well, not really flashes from the Islanders, but...
Hold on. We're going to talk about the Islanders.
And but yeah, you know, you got Anaheim and Colorado that have won cups out, you know, in the West there, and Chicago and Detroit are good teams. Columbus has been building something. Nashville has been building something. St. Louis, you know, so it's, I think it's good in that way. I think all four of those have good model franchises and you know, upward mobility as well.
What they're calling Conference D right now, or at least that's they're calling it on TSN.
Which means that's what they're calling it.
D. That's Conference D, not Conference D's. Anyway.
D who?
Exactly. When you look at having, you know, New Jersey, I don't see them really floundering around forever. The Rangers, who have a ton of money, doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be good, but they're going to be okay.
In a salary cap league.
And then, yeah, and then Philly, Pittsburgh, and Washington. That's a heck of a conference.
The other thing that I've noticed with this, a lot of the gripes were sort of that the two easternmost conferences only having seven teams and the two westernmost only having eight. I think a lot of that signals to me anyway. That obviously everybody has kind of known that the days of Phoenix having an NHL club are sort of numbered, but to me that signals that that team might be moving to the East Coast. And I think allowing those two divisions or two conferences in the East to have only seven teams gives the NHL a little bit more flexibility to kind of slot that team into, you know, wherever they may land, whether it be a Hamilton or a Quebec City or wherever that may be. It builds in a little bit more flexibility with a club whose future is, frankly, a little bit uncertain.
Well, but even if they, you know, the other outlandish possibility that's always been on the edge for them was Kansas City, and
sure,
that would fit in with that conference or division that they're with as well. So,
well, and if you were to move that team to Kansas City, you could easily take a Detroit or a Columbus and move them into one of those mm-hmm. other Eastern leagues without any problem whatsoever.
Mm. Yep.
So I think in the long term, you know, there are a few franchises whose future might be a little bit unsettled, but I think they've built in enough flexibility to the point where they're not going to be stuck with a club in Winnipeg playing in the Southeast Division.
Yeah. Well, Southeast Manitoba.
It's close enough, right?
Yeah. It's Southeast something.
Did somebody say Islanders?
No, I'm pretty sure we haven't brought up the Islanders.
The NHL first star of the week? Matt Molson of the Islanders?
Who's he? Not heard of him.
He's awesome.
good college guy holding down the net for the majority of games there, too.
Bus's homeboy.
Yeah.
Drafted by the other New York team.
Yeah. Alvaro Montoya.
I watched pretty much the entire Islanders game on Tuesday night.
Your guys.
My Islanders.
Now if they could just climb out of 14th place.
Well, Matt Molson is leading them out of the depths of the Eastern Conference too.
They got bits and pieces.
I like their pieces. I do they're too. Fun to watch.
Nah, they suck.
They suck. Hold on. We do not suck.
Yes, you suck.
My Islanders.
Well, the Islanders are selling shares to the public?
There's no market.
Yeah, you get an unbuilt arena, and
I'll tell you what, I you know, for the pure spectator value and sports memorabilia value, I'd be more likely to buy a share in the Islanders than the team that's currently selling them, but that's because I'm a hockey guy.
Yeah. Anyway, Matt Molson has 8 goals in his last 5 games. Former Cornell stalwart.
Well, they've got some pieces, but not a lot of pieces.
They need some help on the blue line.
You know what? If this was some
and a forward and a goal.
If this was some random year in the past, having a goal stable of Montoya, Nabokov, and DiPietro could be pretty awesome.
I mean, they got.
Yeah.
There's some stuff there. I mean,
but Molson, they've had Tavares for years, I think.
Tavares is really good. Bailey's good. Oposo's there. He's decent.
No, he's had a lousy year.
Is Montoya going to be the next GM?
Missed it.
No, he's a starter.
Yeah.
It's probably Kevin Weeks, I think.
They're going to make Rick DiPietro work as the GM for free for 25 years.
Pay off the rest of that contract.
They should.
Player coach Rick DiPietro.
another good college guy.
Reg Dunlop. No, they don't have a lot going on.
I disagree.
I've had the fascination with the Islanders for a long time, like looking at it, and they always have a few pieces that make you think, but they never pull it together. I don't know what it is.
Matt Molson was a Pittsburgh draft pick, never signed, or signed briefly.
Never signed. You're right.
Was an LA organization.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't catch on there. The Islanders took a chance on him. If he keeps going, he's going to have his third straight 30-goal season.
No, wait a second. I thought he had a little bit of a decent run with the Kings.
He had a couple of games here and there, but nothing sustained with the Kings, no.
Oh.
All right, career regular season.
Yep, I'm looking at him.
Kings, 22 games, 9 points, and then 7 games, 1 point, 1 goal. He's played 82 games the last 2 years. He had 30 and 31 goals. He's already got 14 this year. He is boom.
You can see maybe where the Kings might not have room for him.
Yeah, but I think it's more of the old guard. It's the... You know, when you talk to coaches and when you talk to scouts, they're always talking about what guys can't do. Right? You know what this guy does? He scores goals. It's not pretty, but he scores goals. And that's how they tally up the wins and losses. You know, they count the goals. Not the bad thing. Not the you know.
Did anybody ever ask him his favorite beer?
I'm sure it has been asked.
Never Pfeiffer.
His brother.
Pilsner. So.
One of the greatest questions of Inch all time before I was even there.
Yeah.
Labatt.
Obviously, a lot of that of Molson's success has to do with the fact that, you know, he's on a playing with some pretty good guys on his line.
Oh, he is, for sure.
I mean, so much of the NHL and in hockey in general, I guess, is even just finding the complementary pieces to the star players that you've got.
And right now, those complementary pieces are John Tavares.
Yeah.
The star player, Mammal.
Sure.
P.A. Peranto.
P.A. Peranto. So.
I think...
Anyway, I
like Mark Street. He's a good defenseman.
He's a good player. Milan Yurchina, former Caps.
Stinks.
He doesn't stink. He's good. big juice.
Speaking of the Caps, we had a little change there, didn't we?
How about Marty Reasoner, by the way, for the Isles at minus 15?
Yeah. So I take it you're not an Islanders fan, Buzz.
How many high draft picks does this team need to
ask Matt Millen?
Apparently several more.
That's true. Yeah, they're terrible.
So maybe Ricky D is their Martin Mayhew.
No, I think Ricky D is their Chuck Rogers. Smoking trees.
I was gonna say, is he passed out on the table of a Mexican chain restaurant in Novi
with a pocket full of dank?
So,
which restaurant was he in? A chain restaurant? Was it Taco Bell?
No, not Taco Bell. It was like on the border or something.
Oh. I was going to say, Chi-Chi's is closed.
It is.
Now we can talk about my team, the Maple Leafs. They're playing some decent hockey. Phil Kessel.
He's kind of good. Anything for the W.
Hey, and they got their goalie back, too, so.
It's kind of a tough bounce for Scrivens.
Yeah.
We'll start you on a Wednesday night. Nobody's paying attention. Against St. Louis, Columbus, or something. You get the win. All right, kid, your next start, me home on Saturday night on Hockey Night Canada.
You know what, though? The thing I noticed about him was he was getting absolutely no offensive support. You know, team scoring one goal, two goals. And then they put in, what's his name from the Swedish kid?
Gustafsson, the monster.
And they're scoring 7-6 goals.
He's awful.
How about Lupul? 7 or 9.
Somebody's exasperated.
A little bit. It's like the hard luck pitcher, you know? Yeah. Guy in baseball
Doug
gets
Fister on the Mariners.
if he pitches for the Mariners, he's just not good anyway, so.
Who's the other? There were three. The NHL's three stars this week. Molson was one, and there was another college guy. Was it Quick?
Yep.
Oh, Quick.
You don't like him?
I'll refrain from making the comment I was going to make.
Okay. Does he like know your sister or something? Like what?
Are we talking about the same Quick?
No. John Quick.
Quick, the goalie.
Oh, that Quick. I was like, gotcha. Yeah, the goalie.
Not Visa Quick.
Yeah, okay, that's what I was getting at. I was like, I didn't know he was that good.
No.
I forgot about the good Quick.
Yeah. So.
Good stuff. You know, another college guy had a hat trick this week. Ryan Jones from Miami.
Oh, good. With the Preds? Is he still with the Preds?
No, he's with the Oilers.
Oh, that's right. He was always with the Oilers.
Average age, 19.
Yeah, no kidding.
I was going to say, Ryan Jones is kind of old on that squad.
Yeah, he's the elder statesman.
He was fun to watch in Miami.
Yeah, he was a good player. I saw a little bit of them on Saturday night. They're fun to watch.
With Oils?
Yeah. Good deal. I mean, Ryan Nugent Hopkins, he's pretty good.
Good. Good deal.
I think they're on again on Saturday. I think they play.
I don't watch that show. I've been watching so little NHL.
Calgary again.
We watching Colgate and Merrimack.
That's right.
Maybe some fighting.
Yeah, I heard your guy on the radio today.
Bones?
Yep.
Seth Mitchell also fighting on Saturday night.
Yeah, I read that article in the USA Today.
Yeah. Glad, are you a UFC guy?
Big, yeah, I follow pretty close.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yep. So we'll see.
Where is, who's he fighting again?
Bones?
Yeah.
Lyoto Machida.
That's what I thought.
Hockey. Hockey. All right. Anything else for the deterioration, fellas?
You want to relay that story?
Sure. We'll share with the masses.
Or do you want to save that until the end?
This is the end.
Well, I've got one good story to tell.
Well, then you go first.
All right. I'm proud to announce that on Monday of this week, whatever day that was, the 5th or something, I officially received my master's degree from the University of Denver.
Congratulations.
It was being held in Hawk because I hadn't paid $300 in traffic tickets. Parking tickets.
So did you pay it or did you...
No, they just all down. Of a sudden, I think they just had like an amnesty program or something. So I got an email out of the blue last week, and it just said, "Yeah, we've got your sheepskin here, and where should we send it?"
Wow.
I said, "Send it to my house." So I gave him my address, and on Monday it showed up just like Nelson Mandela, free at last.
I was wondering where you're going with that. He hangs out in Holt all the time.
Incarcerated for a crime it did not commit. Kind of like the A-team. So, yeah. So, turns out I wasn't the only one. I guess they had a whole big thing going on. I heard a story about somebody who had like $1,200 in parking tickets, and he got his back. So,
well, everything has a happy ending. That's
good. Yeah. Cool.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. So, I think the moral of the story is stick it to the man.
Put it on your resume and stick it to the man.
Exactly.
There you go.
All right.
All right. I went to see a USHL game. Great game. Sweet old rink, like really old fairgrounds, Coliseum type place. Where the Indianapolis Ice played against Sioux Falls Stampede. Many college commits, kids were already decided on college hockey, so good to see some of those guys. But one of the big takeaways was they have a cheer that they do. You know, a lot of minor pro and junior teams will have a song or a chant or a cheer that they'll do after goals or whatever it might be after wins. And at Indianapolis, the public address announcer will announce the goal. And will, you know, goal Indianapolis by, you know, number 9 so-and-so, assisted by number 15 so-and-so, and number 25 so-and-so. And the time of the goal is, you know, 10:18. And then he'll give about a 1 Mississippi, and then he just says, like, screams into the mic. He goes, "Hockey!" And then all the people in the crowd go, "Hockey!"
That makes no sense.
It's tremendous.
Well, I know it is.
It's Indiana. That's all I can say.
Yeah. Hockey! Yeah.
Look up from your mobile devices from the Steve Alford retirement ceremony for 1 second while we scream hockey over the loudspeaker.
Only for the home goals, I'm assuming.
Yes, they did not announce such enthusiasm with the Sioux Falls goals.
Because technically that, too, is hockey.
That is correct.
So people like it.
We need to incorporate that across every sport.
Football!
Baseball!
Strikeout. A guy strikes out. Sack fly.
And the quietest would be still soccer.
Diving. But yeah, it was nice.
I think. How many people showed up?
It wasn't a great crowd.
There are some things going on.
No, not really. Not really. Talking to some of the folks associated with that team, I guess they usually draw much better on Fridays. December's tough for that stuff. Like American Hockey League games, just you got other things going on. That gap between Thanksgiving and Christmas, your weekends are shot.
Mm-hmm.
For the casual fan. So that's about it. Last call, anybody? Anybody? Anybody?
Nope.
All right. Thanks for listening to the Inch Podcast. Inch Podcast is presented by the NCAA Men's Division I Frozen Four.
Years of practice, dedication in and out of the classroom, stamina, persistence, sacrifice. It all leads to this moment. Champions win here. Don't miss the 2012 NCAA Men's Frozen Four, April 5th and 7th, hosted by the University of Alabama in Huntsville and the Tampa Bay Sports Commission at St. Pete Times Forum in Tampa, Florida. For information, visit ncaa.com/tickets.
All right. This has been an edition of the Inch Podcast for Kevin Zeiss, Mike Autobus, James V. Dowd. My name is Joe Gladyszewski. Thanks for listening and following InsideCollegeHockey.com.